Curtain Radio in Perth. Well, as promised in the studio right now, the lovely Kat Ross is an astrophysicist here at Curtin University. Her list of credentials are far too long to mention in a couple of seconds. So thank you for joining us, Kat.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me.
There's so much to talk about because there are so many new things that are happening that
always.
Every day.
We're always finding new things in space. It's pretty big out there, so there's a lot to discover.
Pretty big isn't the word I would think of. I mean, this is something I was just saying. I don't think the general public, myself included, obviously, even though I get to speak to people like you, can get our measly little head around the universe going forever. Infinite, you know, it's just phenomenal. And how is it that this planet became the one where we've got civilization on it?
I know, it's so lucky. There's been so many steps where it could have gone against us and we wouldn't be here, but luck was in our favor and here we are.
Well, just quickly, you haven't seen it. I just asked you whether you've seen it, and I talked about this a lot on air. I keep boring people because I want them to see it. Just understand, we get an understanding of how the planet was formed millions of years ago.
Absolutely, yeah. We're about 5 billion years old, the Earth. But when you look at the scale of the history of the universe and then the history of our solar system and the history of the Earth itself, humans have been around for, you know, a microsecond in that scale.
Exactly.
We are just so insignificant in that time scale. And yet, in that small time scale, we've managed to do so much damage to our planet.
This is
just such a small amount of time.
This is the question I ask of people in my mind. What the heck are you doing to us? You know, if everyone thinks they're that powerful, or countries think they're that powerful, you only have to look at what nature is, how strong it is.
That's it.
We cannot beat nature.
And to be fair, when you look at the chances of the Earth being the way it is and having these perfect conditions where we can survive, statistically, it is just so improbable that we manage to have this. And so planets like Earth are really hard to come by where we could survive happily, and yet here we are. And so to take care of this planet is pretty important, because we don't have an alternative.
It does worry me. I mean, this documentary is on the ABC iView called Earth. There's quite a few episodes in it, and I've watched them four times, I think, now, all the episodes, because every time I learn a bit more.
Exactly.
It is very exciting. And the volcanoes that we've still got sort of bubbling away underneath the planet here at the moment is sort of a bit concerning.
Well, it's concerning, but it's also really good. We actually do want these volcanoes. The volcanoes are really crucial for helping us even have an atmosphere. So if you look at what happens when you take away these volcanoes, we actually have a perfect example of what happens right here in our solar system, and that's the planet Mars. So Mars used to have an atmosphere. It used to have liquid water, and it was a happy little planet like Earth, and then it was just that little bit further away from the sun than the Earth. And as a result, it cooled down. The core inside Mars cooled down, and so the volcanic activity started to slow down as well. And so it stopped erupting and adding these things into the atmosphere of Mars. And as a result, it just got swept away by the solar wind, and Mars is now this dusty rock rather than a nice wet rock like Earth.
I can't believe it. Now, that makes me feel so much more comfortable. What about the earthquakes and that sort of thing? Do we
have these to? Are all natural geological processes. We really, these are a fact of having a molten core and having the solid rock on top of that molten layers moving around and shifting on the Earth.
Why do we have a molten core?
Oh gosh, now that is a complex question, and ultimately I don't think we entirely know, or at least I certainly don't know. I think it's likely a factor of a few things, of the contents of what our planet is made up of. We're quite rocky, but we also have quite a high iron content, and all of these factors come into play. Yeah.
Well, I think we should have respect for nature.
Absolutely.
I wish everyone just pulled their heads in around the world.
Absolutely.
I bet you think that way yourself.
Definitely.
You think beyond this planet. You think beyond this way. What work have you been working on the planet?
So I don't just work beyond this planet and beyond the solar system. I work beyond this galaxy. So I'm currently working on a survey called GLEAM, and that's an acronym. Astronomers love an acronym. So GLEAM stands for the Galactic and Extragalactic All Sky MWA Survey. And in fact, I'm working on the extended version, so it's GLEAM X. And this is done with a survey, with an instrument called the MWA, so the Murchison Wide Field Array.
Oh, yes, of course.
Exactly, my favourite little telescope. Looks like these little metal spiders that are just thrown around in the desert up in WA.
But it's you can look at them through here, down here.
Exactly. Yes. We connect them down from here in Perth, connect up there, and then look out into the universe. And so my work is doing a full survey of just scanning the skies and seeing what we find. And this survey was done a few years ago ago, and they surveyed the entire sky and found about 300,000 galaxies.
When you say that, when you say galaxies, you're talking about planets?
No, I'm talking way bigger than this. So let's zoom out. So we have the Earth here, we're a planet.
Yep.
And we are orbiting our sun in a solar system, in a stellar system. So that's one sun and we have, you know, a few planets. And then our Milky Way galaxy consists of roughly a few billion stars, just like our own sun. And we think that more or less there is roughly one planet to each star. Some planets, some stars have more than one planet and some stars have
none. And
the
star is a form like our planet.
Like our sun.
Our sun. Oh,
yes. So all stars are just like our sun.
Okay.
There are different types, obviously, but they're all burning balls of gas.
Okay.
And then they probably have a planet around them. And then that forms our Milky Way galaxy. So billions of stars and planets form our Milky Way galaxy. And then I've done this survey where we've now got an upgrade on the Murchison Winfield Array. So we've done the same survey of scanning the entire sky and seeing what we find. And last time, the entire sky, we found 300,000 of these galaxies.
Did you count them?
One by one, just sifted through. That's it. That's how we do it.
Oh, my gosh.
Thankfully, no. We have some programs that can do that for me. Amazing. But now, with this upgrade, we've surveyed just a third of the sky. So we're not even finished yet. And a third of the sky, we've already found around 700,000 galaxies. So we've more than doubled all that we found last time. And within that, we're hoping to find these itty-bitty baby galaxies, little baby ones.
Which will be what? What do you think you would expect to find?
These are my favourite, the little baby galaxies. This is what I spent my entire PhD studying. So when we look at the Murchison Winfield Array, one of the reasons I love this telescope is because we can see in radio colour. So in the same way that when we look with our eyes, we can see colour, red, green and blue, all the colours of the rainbow, in radio we can see these different frequencies and they essentially correspond to the radio rainbow. Now, really old galaxies are very red. They're really bright in red. They're very faint in blue. But these babies are faint in red and bright in blue. So they're the opposite way around.
Okay.
And so when we look at the radio colours, we can pick out all the ones that are blue and find these little blue ones, and they're the little baby
galaxies. Are they going to get bigger or they just stay babies?
Oh, that's the big question, isn't it? We're not entirely sure. So a lot of them, there's actually a big debate in the community between whether these sources are actually young. Are these galaxies young, little babies that haven't yet grown to the size of typical galaxies? Or are they, this is the technical term, just to be clear, are they frustrated? Are they frustrated teens that are being confined by something that's preventing them from growing? And we honestly don't know.
No.
Yeah.
Well, it's up to you, Kat.
Hopefully.
What is the formation of them? Where do they come from? How are they born, for the want of a better term?
Yeah, that's a great question as well. And that's part of the research I'm hoping to figure out with finding these babies. We think at the centre of pretty much all of these galaxies, there's likely a supermassive black hole. So these really, really massive, massive black holes. Just like in our own Milky Way galaxy, we have a supermassive black hole called Sagittarius A star. Now, in some of these galaxies, gas and dust is swirling around and falling into that black hole. And as a result of the spin and the magnetic field of that black hole, it turns out they're really not very they're not very clean when they destroy things. They're quite a messy eater, as my friend Dr. Adele Goodwin likes to describe it. So these black holes don't necessarily devour the entirety of everything that falls in. So as stuff is swirling around and falling into this black hole, it does also shoot a lot back out. And we see these big streams of jets and lobes and big fluffy clouds coming out from the central supermassive black hole. And that whole system is what we call an active galactic nucleus. And that's because it's actively eating and throwing stuff out. It's galactic, it's inside a galaxy, and it's a nucleus. It's at the center of this galaxy.
Okay.
And so we're not creative with our names.
But you're getting there. I mean, you talk multi-millions of these planets, or whatever you like to call them. It's just phenomenal. What about, how do we get weather formations the way we do with the anger of, I say the word anger, of nature with cyclones and flooding and all those terrible things? Well, they're terrible because they're destructive.
Yeah, they are terrible, but they are also, you know, a part of the natural cycles.
No, they are. I get that.
There's the upside of looking at radio. We can actually observe through pretty much any weather. So if there's clouds, radio waves can go through the clouds. So I can observe during cloudy weather. That's fine. If it's raining, I can still observe. That's fine. The only real weather conditions that stop us observing and looking into the universe is when there's lightning, and that's because it can create a lot of powerful radiation, and it can interfere with our telescope.
So the weather formations that we have are swirling around our planet at any given time. Is there any one particular thing that influences something like a cyclone?
Well, definitely, I think you have the regions. So, for example, if you have water that's becoming more and more warm, it's being heated up. You know, there's a bit of a spoiler alert for climate change being relevant here. Yeah. So you've got water systems that are heating up, and that's evaporating more water, putting it into the clouds. And we have these kind of systems where now the winds are happening, we've got different pressure systems working, and you start to see the swirling of a cyclone.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, when we've got one heading our way, we'll get you to come in and explain it.
Gosh, I hope there's someone who's got more of an understanding than me who can hopefully help us out.
You're not doing too bad, though. That's incredible. Now, there's been a lot said and shown about the eclipse as we saw yesterday from, our time yesterday, USA. It's a rare occasion.
Very much so, yes. Yeah.
Are we going to see anything like that here?
Absolutely, in fact. So just last year there was a total eclipse in Australia, but it was just off the coast in Exmouth, yes.
I think Robin
went up. Dr. Robin Cook was up there and managed to see it. So it was very exciting. It was the first one we'd had in Australia in quite some time. But thankfully, if you missed that one, it was really only on the very tip of Exmouth. So very hard to get there and see it. But now there's going to be another one in Australia in July in 2020. So put it in your diaries, but that will be over the east coast of Australia. So
why are people so moved, so emotional about it?
It is a really interesting experience. And when you think about it in terms of space, the fact that we are here on Earth at precisely the right time, that the moon is at precisely the right distance to be blocking the sun at precisely the right time and precisely the right distance, the fact that that lines up the way that it does is so rare. It is so lucky that all of that is even happening, but that it's happening when we're here at a time to appreciate that as well is so phenomenally rare.
Why does it happen at such, distances? I mean, when I say distance, in years, it doesn't happen on an annual event or something.
So they do happen fairly often, but the Earth is covered by a lot of water. So sometimes it's just unlucky. These eclipses will happen only over water and no one can go see it.
I see what you're saying.
So it's rare that it happens on land for us to be able to go and see it. But one of the great things, this is what I love about astronomy, in that you look at civilizations through history and eclipses have always been really important and a really spiritual event, to the point that we've been tracking the path of the moon and the sun and the earth and all the stars so that we could understand and predict when the next one was occurring, so that we would know when it's happening.
What information do we need to know about the future of humanity, do you think, to keep us intact? We need to look after our planet, I understand that, but why do we need to know an awful lot about what is right out there? It's interesting, don't get me wrong, it's fascinating.
There's a couple of things. I think, firstly, one, it's good to know these things just for the sake of knowing them, It's interesting to learn this for the sake of it. But beyond that, I think it's really important to learn about the universe and see just how lucky and rare it is that it happens, to see how happy we are here on Earth and how lucky we have it. Because the more that you look out there, the more you realise that this just doesn't happen very often. We don't see places like the Earth out there.
Well, once you see this documentary series, you start to sit in wonder about, nature, of course, how it happened. Mm. And, of course, we've got all these marine life. We've got animals in the trees. We've got birds. We've got all this, all these things. And the dinosaur time, I mean, that was multi-millions of years ago. Mm. And you'd know about the destruction of the dinosaurs. And I wonder why the asteroids got them and nothing else. They wiped them out.
I think they definitely wiped out a lot of things.
Oh, they did?
Yes,
okay.
Yeah. But there were things that managed to survive. I think it came down to whether or not people, the organisms, the plants, the animals, could survive a lack of sunlight and also the heat that came through as well.
Yeah.
And then, you're looking, there's now fewer resources for food, and so it became quite a competitive environment, I imagine, yes.
It would have been a bit messy back then.
Definitely, yes.
But they were saying that, of course, the downtime, down in time, where the dinosaurs were what they were, that we're looking at emus and ostriches that may be linked with the dinosaurs.
Yeah, exactly.
I wonder why they see that link.
I think it's, yeah, genetically, I guess we can see that they must come from a common ancestor in the same way chickens might be related there. I'm not sure.
I don't know what they're related to.
It's all a very complicated field. I'll leave it to the evolutionary biologists
it's
to do
absolutely
that one.
Fascinating. It'll never be any different. We'll always have our, you know, aerials up, wanting people like yourself to explain a few more things to us, Kat. You must love everything that you do.
I do. I love my research.
I don't blame you. When did you know that you were interested in the universe?
Well, I think when I was a kid, my family used to go out onto the street and we'd watch the International Space Station go overhead. Right. And I loved it, seeing this, you know, feat of engineering that was humans out there in space. It was amazing. But I think I also got a little worried because it means they have to go to the bathroom up there. And so to this day, my family will still cover our heads to stop any of the free-falling space poop from falling on us.
Isn't that interesting as a child to try and work out the practicalities
exactly,
of everything?
Exactly, exactly.
The space travel, or the space junk, for the want of a better term, up there these days must be amazing.
There is a lot of space junk up there. And in fact, I think there was just the other week a piece of space junk, they think, fell through the home of a man in Florida.
Oh dear.
So that's definitely concerning, because if that hits you on the head, you're not looking good.
We've been lucky, haven't we? Because there's been quite a lot come down.
There has. Yeah. And again, most of the time it falls into the ocean, so that's okay.
We've been lucky like that.
I mean, the Earth is mostly covered by water. Yeah, so fair enough. Statistically, it's more likely to hit
that. A bit of space junk in your backyard, that'd be worth a bit of a news story.
Well, yeah, I think there was a bit of space junk that landed in WA that was some NASA and got charged for littering. So
did they really?
They really did, yeah.
Oh, I love it. I think we human beings are a weird lot. I really do.
Keep track of your space junk, NASA, please.
Put it in the right rubbish bin.
Exactly.
Kate, thank you so much. We'll speak to you next time.
Great. Thank you so much for having me.
Lovely, Kat Ross.